WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In the rock documentary spoof, This is Spinal Tap, Christopher Guest played a brain-dead heavy metal guitarist. In The Princess Bride, he was the sadistic Count. And as a cast member of Saturday Night Live, he compared self-inflicted injuries with Billy Crystal and said, "I hate it when I do that." Christopher Guest is now making his debut as a feature film director with a film he co-wrote called The Big Picture. Kevin Bacon stars as a film school graduate who thinks he's hot stuff when he's wooed by Hollywood agents and studio execs. Bit by bit, they corrupt his arty ambitions until he finds himself pitching story ideas about beach parties and hot stewardesses. The execs Guest had to pitch his film to are the same kinds of people he spoofs. I asked him how he went about pitching his story ideas.
The usual way, you know, you go into an office at one of the studios and you sit down and you tell them your movie and they have a very blank expression on their face. And then they ask you to leave. This happened at a lot of places. One studio, Paramount, said, go ahead and write the script, and we wrote the script, and then they didn't think it was such a good idea after all. And then David Putnam read it and said, I'd like to make this movie. And briefly what happened is, after getting a go-ahead on a film, you begin the process, and there's a certain amount of momentum. And we started, and he was, in 2 weeks, he was gone. And then what happened is, because the movie is in fact about this, there was a transition at the studio. A different executive took over, a woman, just as it is in the script, in fact. So it was something written beforehand that was now happening to me. And this was interesting. But that's basically it.
Did you go through meetings like the Kevin Bacon character does, in which the studio guys are taking your ideas and trying to make them better with their own ideas?
No, well, not really,
adding your
actually.
Own ideas to it.
Uh-huh. Those meetings are a composite of many meetings I've had in 15 or 16 years mm-hmm. that I've done this, whatever this is, this in quotations. I haven't actually had that happen to me. Ironically, in the making of this movie, it's a small film, we were left alone, so I didn't actually go through the same mm-hmm. thing that Kevin goes through in the film, but I have had meetings that are that odd and that surreal, and I wanted to show that.
Would you describe one of those meetings?
A real meeting or the meeting
in the film? A real absurd meeting.
Well, I can't really describe it any better than what's in the film. Basically, you know, you bring in an idea and you say, you know, I'd like to make a film about a rodeo, and the next sentence is, you know, could we do it on the beach? And you say, well, what do you mean? And they say, well, you know, it would be a good idea to do it on the beach. And, you know, you say, well, there's these two characters. There's a black woman and she's married to a Frenchman. And they say, well, could they be Americans and white? And, I mean, it's quite arbitrary that the changes. I couldn't possibly get any more surreal than what's in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually has happened. So,
Martin Short has a great small part in it as an agent. His performance is basically uncredited. I can't remember if at the very end there's a credit for him or not.
Well, it's not basically uncredited. It's actually uncredited.
Uncredited, right. Yeah. I couldn't remember.
It's kind of one or the other. Yeah, a lot of people do favors for people. Martin's a friend of mine, and I think what happens is you don't want to make it seem like it's his film, because he's well-known, and Billy Murray did that in Tootsie, and several other actors have done it recently, where you just sort of do that. And again, it's not his movie, it's Kevin Bacon's movie, and I guess they didn't want that confusion to make it seem like it was a Martin Short film.
Uh-huh. So does this mean he doesn't get paid for it with this kind of arrangement?
Oh, no, he gets paid. But again, it's, you know, he did 2 days of work, that's all he did, and it was... all those people like John Cleese and Roddy McDowall, it's basically a favor because we didn't have a large budget, so they just came in for a day or two at the mm-hmm. most, and that was the situation.
When you started to direct this movie, did you find yourself going back to other movies to watch, to start watching movies in a new way?
No, not really, because when I'd been working as an actor in films, and I had also been interested in photography for a long time, and I guess it was always a part of my awareness when I was on a set in terms of how they were lighting it and how they were shooting certain things. And it was, I guess, an organic kind of progression for me to start directing. So, no, I don't think so.
Christopher Guest is my guest, and he has a new movie that he both co-wrote and directed. It's called The Big Picture, and it stars Kevin Bacon. Now, your co-writer, one of your co-writers on this is Michael McKean, with who you co-starred in This is Spinal Tap, which was
right.
a spoof of heavy metal documentaries. And you played a brain-dead lead guitarist. How did you develop that character?
It wasn't much to develop. I just... that's really me. Well, I had spent time in England. My dad is English, and although he's not that kind of English... and I'd been playing music with Michael McKean for many years in bands in New York and elsewhere. And I started developing this guy, I guess, in the mid-70s and fooling around with the idea of playing somebody like this. And then when I was living at this hotel in Los Angeles when I first moved out there called the Chateau Marmont, I saw a band arrive. I was standing at the desk for some reason, and this heavy metal band showed up to stay there. And there was a great scene that sort of prompted this whole movie for me, which was the bass player couldn't find his instrument. They were checking in, and the manager said,
"You know, where's your bass?"
And he said, "I don't know. I think I left it at the airport."
You left your bass at the airport?
"Yeah, well, I don't know where it is, do I?" And it was this was played out of about 15 minutes, where he was in such a daze, he didn't even know where his instrument was, and it was this... I got very inspired by that little moment of pathos, I guess.
I want to play a very short clip from the movie, and this is part of the film where the director, Rob Reiner, is interviewing you.
Do you feel that in collaboration with David, that you are afforded the opportunity to express yourself musically the way you would like to?
Well, I think I do, you know, in my solos. Yeah. My solos are my trademark.
Well, that's a great solo you're playing there. Did you do your own music for the film?
Yes, we did. That was played live, in fact, at a venue. I think it was in the Valley. We shot at a number of different theaters. Yes, Michael McKean and Harry Shearer and I wrote all the music and played it and produced the album subsequently. And then we went on an actual tour of America after the film had come out. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What were some of the stadium rock gestures that you knew you wanted to get in your character?
Well, I mean, we went to see a bunch of heavy metal bands, and we actually started playing around L.A. even before we started shooting the film, just to see what that was like. And they're rather limited. I mean, this isn't, you know, like a repertory company thing happening here. I mean, it's either you're shoving your fist in the air or you're grabbing your groin. It's kind of one or the other. And you turn around and you kind of moon people, and you stick your tongue out, and it just kind of comes naturally when you're standing in front of a lot of people. The last gig we played was in Seattle. There were 15,000 people, and then it was that weird thing where the line is now being crossed into reality, because they were screaming and jumping up and down, and we thought, well, is this real now?
Did you ever study music?
Apparently. Yeah, I went to the High School of Music and Art in New York City. I studied classical music and eventually started getting into country music, the natural progression, of course, from studying clarinet. I started playing the mandolin, and I played guitar with Arlo Guthrie because we went to the same school. And then I started playing in bluegrass bands and then rock and roll after that.
Well, I guess that diversity gave you the kind of background you needed to write all the song parodies for National Lampoon that you wrote.
Yeah, it did. We did some country music, some rock and roll, and it did. I really felt secure in a number of different kinds of music that I felt I could do that. And that was a great opportunity at the Lampoon, because we had our own studio, and every week for the radio show, which ultimately was made into albums, we could do new material. Yeah. And Michael McKean and I, in fact, write a song for The Big Picture, the Pez People song, people dressed as Pez dispensers.
Right. Of all the song parodies that you've written, does one of them still really stay with you as being a really a really decent song, if you know what I mean?
Well, you know, what's interesting is when people hear... I did a show called Lemmings. It was off Broadway and it ran for about a year with Chevy Chase and John Belushi. And in that show, I did James Taylor and Bob Dylan and other people were done in the show. And people would come up and say, how did you get the rights to for the music? You know, they understood that the words were different, which was a great compliment because actually the music was original and really stood on its own, but they were just listening to the words, and it was the music was obviously derivative intentionally, but they would, that was one of their questions a lot.
Let's talk about your part in the movie The Princess Bride. You were the evil count in that film. Why were you cast in that role?
Why was I cast?
Yeah, in that role, in that role.
Oh, it was a bet. Well, I've been friends with Rob Reiner for a long time, and this was one of his favorite books that William Goldman had written, The Princess Bride, and he showed me the script, and he said, how about this? And I said, great. I like playing villains. It's usually pretty juicy, and this was particularly twisted, so I kind of liked it. And there was an opportunity to work with some friends and ride a horse and go to England for 3 months, so it sounded like a good idea at the time, and in retrospect, I'm glad I did it. I like the film.
Well, I want to play a scene from The Princess Bride.
Okay.
In which our hero is locked in your torture chamber.
Ooh.
And you're about to test out your latest creation on him.
Beautiful, isn't it? Took me half a lifetime to invent it. I'm sure you've discovered my deep and abiding interest in pain. Present, I'm writing the definitive work on the subject. So I want you to be totally honest with me on how the machine makes you feel. This being our first try, I'll use the lowest setting.
I love the way you play it. You really play it like a man of refinement who's become a connoisseur of torture and pain.
Yes, I thought it was interesting to have a certain detachment about that. I thought that was scarier, and I didn't want to make him nice in any way. I thought that was important, that even though this was a comedy in a sense, I really wanted to make him unrelentingly nasty.
Mm-hmm. Have period films or epic movies been an influence on you at all? Did you enjoy them when you were young?
I guess I did. I guess, yeah. I don't know about epic movies, but I certainly like period films. History has always interested me, so I guess, yes.
What were the movies that you think helped create your fantasy life when you were young?
What fantasy life? It's so hard. Sherlock Holmes was a big influence on me. There's something, Basil Rathbone was one of my early heroes. And I think movies about Romans and those, I mean, they're kind of cheesy to look at now, but people in chariots with hats, with feathers, running around with swords, interested me. The Three Musketeers. Again, these are movies made in the 30s and 40s that I probably saw on television as a kid, rather than the movies that were actually out in the theaters when I was going to the movies, which were movies like The Tingler, which didn't really impress me or affect my fantasy life, except for last night. So I guess that's the answer to that.
You were on Saturday Night Live for
yes.
Billy Crystal uh-huh. and Martin Short.
Uh-huh.
It's my understanding that you were asked to be on that show before that year. I forget, was it 84? I forget what this season was. But
We were on in 84 and 85. Mm-hmm. I was asked a year or so before that to be on.
Why didn't you want to do it?
Well, it just didn't seem like the right time to do it. It was one of these convergences the year we did do it. Billy Crystal wanted to do it. Martin Short, Harry Shearer, and I basically all agreed as a group, in a sense, that, well, if you're doing it, I'll do it. We all basically had one-year contracts. We said we'd just do it for 1 year, and it was a little different because we came in with having had some experience, so we were allowed to have some control over what we were doing, and that's how that came to be.
You know, it's funny, when I think of Billy Crystal, I think of certain characters when I think of Saturday Night Live, likewise with Martin Short. And when I think of your appearances on Saturday Night Live, I think of all the characters who I'd look at and I'd say, who is that? And I said, oh, it's Christopher Guest. You'd really like lose yourself in the character a lot of times. And you didn't do the same number of recurring characters, you know, the character mm-hmm. who's on and does a similar shtick, you know, who yeah. in the same persona every week.
Well, to me, acting is just, I mean, they have this odd term in this country, character actor. I don't know, it's sort of redundant, I suppose. I think I very much like to be other people when I'm acting. I think that's the point. There are certain people who, a movie star is someone who I think hopefully can act, but also gives the audience some comfort because you always know that that's that person. And that's not what I do. I like to put on a hat and a nose and as you say, get lost. I mean, mm-hmm. literally, get lost.
One of the recurring characters that you did do was the thing with Billy Crystal where you would talk about basically self-inflicted injuries and uh-huh. say, I hate it when that happens.
Right.
How did that that running sketch come about?
Well, it's funny how these things evolve, or maybe it's not. I shouldn't be presumptuous. Maybe it's not that funny. Years and years ago, I was fooling around with a friend of mine, Tom Leopold, who's a very funny writer and actor, and it was kind of just something that we would all do socially, where, you know, he would take a staple gun and hold it up to his ear and say, boy, this really hurts, and we'd say, well, then don't do that. You shouldn't do that, you see. And it evolved through this into Billy and I just sitting around the office one day and coming up with these characters who weren't terribly intelligent and just who would go out of their way to come up with these things. Like, you know, you know what I hate is, and they would fill in each other's sentences, which I guess was part of the funny thing of, he said, yeah, you mean when you take a shrimp fork and jam it up your nose? You know, it was that kind of thing. I hate when I do that. And it was just this litany of things with wood-burning tools and various things. And I guess that's how it started, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've written a lot of comedy in conjunction with other people. You know, like your new
yes.
movie's co-written, you
uh-huh.
co-wrote Spinal Tap, you co-wrote uh-huh. the sketch you were just telling us with Billy Crystal.
Right.
Did you find it easier to write that way?
Well, yes, much easier. Because I perform a lot of the things I write, it's very much of a different process than a novelist or writer that sits alone and types. First of all, I don't type, so there's a major drawback. But I really need something to bounce off of, and I very much live the character who's speaking, and that's my writing process. In the film I've just written, it was different and more difficult because it's a sustained script, and the characters have to evolve, hopefully. But I still worked in conjunction with Michael Varhol and Michael McKean.
Mm-hmm. I want to get back to your new movie, The Big Picture.
Okay.
As an actor yourself, who was making his debut as a director, did you find it hard or easy to direct the actors in your movie? Did you know what you wanted right away and how to communicate that to the actors?
Well, I did, actually. Again, having acted for a long time, I felt pretty much at ease with conveying what I wanted. And again, because I was involved in the writing of it, I very much was connected to certainly the Kevin Bacon character in terms of sensibility. And in casting Kevin Bacon, I was really confident that he could bring that out, and I feel he really did. I think it's a wonderful piece of work that he's done in the film.
I know this is a kind of vague question, but what were you like in high school? What were you doing in high school? Were you playing in bands? Were you studious? Did you have a lot of friends?
Well, it was kind of schizophrenic, I guess. I was playing in bands, and at the same time, I was involved in sports. So it was kind of a weird paradox. I was a captain of the ski team and played tennis, and then I would be in these bands. And I did have friends. I had a lot of friends, but those groups of friends would never know each other. So it was kind of that was split up. It was kind of odd because the people who skied invariably didn't want to hang out with the musicians and vice versa. So that was sort of a pattern for a while until I met some of my closer friends, Michael McKean and people that I have collaborated with for a long time, where there was an overall kind of connection where that sort of sets the pattern for your adulthood, I guess.
You say all these different groups that you were friends with wouldn't get along well with each other. Did you change yourself depending on which group you were with at the time? Did you have different characters,
That's a good question. I don't really know. I'm not sure if I don't know, not consciously. I don't remember consciously doing that. I still have a very wide variety of interests. You know, I go up to the mountains with my wife Jamie and our daughter, and I'm very happy being there for months at a time, fishing and skiing, and with no thought of anything else. And I don't know many people who go back and forth between the two, in other words, whatever this is, show business or whatever, and that other thing. So that's just sort of another world for me, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. You've done so many parodies of rock songs and rock bands. Did you ever have a fantasy of being a rock star yourself?
I don't know. Maybe very early on, maybe when I was a 15 or something. I guess when you're playing in a band, you must think that. But I also remember thinking, the Beatles had come out and I was just starting to play, and I remember thinking, well, there's just no way. I mean, this is just too hard to follow here. And I'd always done funny things, I suppose, or comedy in some sense, even from when I was small, and it just naturally evolved that I was going to combine that with music. So that just then had its own life, where I would combine two things I liked, playing music and comedy.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.